made their way closer, slogging through the water. The water's cool was a relief from the tropic heat, but Naylor was tiring from wading. It was a slow process. The water deepened, and they finally came to floating docks, where they were able to pull themselves out of the water. Lucky Girl wrung the brackish water out of her clothes with distaste, but Naylor enjoyed the breeze on his wet skin. Out in the distance, the clippers were sailing. From this vantage, the whole world stretched before him, clippers and freighters at their anchor slips. The blue hulls of England, the red flag of China North. He had memorized many of the flags from the old wrecks the shipbreakers worked, the hulls painted with nation and merchant tags. The mass of shipping here was a catalog of the world. A small patrol boat, burning biodiesel and kicking up fumes, moved between huge sailing vessels, carrying pilots out to ships that waited to be guided into dock. All around them the docks bustled. Swanks came down out of ships and were put on water shuttles to make their transfer upriver or to the rail lines inland. A pair of half-men guarded a yacht of some swank, staring at Toole with an open challenge in their eyes and guttural growling of acknowledgement as he went past. All around them, coolie people swarmed, black, pink, brown, blonde, red-headed, black-haired, tall and short, all of them with labor tattoos and levy ensigns, working cargo down into shallow bottom rafts for transfer. More shallow bottoms moved out from the drowned wreckage of the city, sailing in a slow wallow to the big ships. "We could have just hitched with the freight," Naylor muttered, nodding at rail containers wallowing their way toward the clipper ships. Some of the cargo barges were old, broken sailing vessels, but others were larger, more massive, built to burn coal and also to take advantage of wind. Huge fin-like wind wings stuck up along their lengths, harnessing the breeze to help move the lumbering ships and their scrap loads of nickel, copper, iron, and steel. The activity was intoxicating, busier even than the shipbreaking swarms of Bright Sands Beach. Nita craned her head over the crowds of people, pointed.
"Those ships over there," she said.
Ahead, a line of clippers lay anchored. A schooner, a catamaran freighter, and a yacht, all of them lying across a bridge at a separate dock. They were beautiful, the fastest things on the high seas, equipped with rocket cannon and small missile systems for pirates, armed and deadly and fast, and nothing about them like the rusting wreckage that Naylor had always known and worked to disassemble. Comparing the clippers to those old-world wrecks was like squinting into daylight after coming out of a rust hold. As they got closer, Nita scanned the ships and said,
"They're not mine."
She slumped, obviously disappointed. Naylor felt a stab of disappointment himself, but stifled it. If he was realistic, it was unlikely they'd find a friendly ship immediately. Still, the river port was full of traffic. Ships were arriving all the time. Even as they watched, one of the clippers was unfurling its sails, long, rippling canvas streams swishing down into place on fast pulley systems. They snapped in the breeze as the ship cast off and slipped away from the dock.
"We'll come back tomorrow," Naylor said.
Lucky Girl nodded, but still she scanned the ships as if hoping one of them would magically turn into something else. Finally, she nodded and they went back through the shallows and down along the dock bridges, making their way back into the Orleans as dusk fell. That night, they bought rats on a stick from a boat seller and watched the street river traffic. Small boats pulled past, carrying food and laborers and shore leave sailors. From somewhere in the distance came a mournful sound of brass instruments, a death dirge echoing over the water. A few children played in the black water. Naylor took the children to mean that their current place was as safe as any could be. The serious drunks and crystal sliders were somewhere else. The noise of crickets and cicadas filled the dark air. Mosquitoes swarmed around them, biting. The insects were much worse than on the beaches. There the sea breeze blew many away, but but here, amongst the still air of the swamps, they swarmed close and tore at them, a misery of biting insects. Naylor and Nita slapped at the bloodsuckers while Tool watched amused. Naylor wondered if Tool's skin was exceptionally thick, or if there was something about him that scared even mosquitoes away.
"How much money did Sodna give you?"
Tool asked.
"A couple reds and a yellow back?"
Nita asked. "That's all?"
Then bit back her words.
"That's 2 weeks, heavy crew," Naylor said. "What, you spend that in an afternoon shopping?"
Nita shook her head but said nothing.
Tool said,
"Tomorrow you will need to work if you wish to keep eating."
"Where?"
Naylor asked.
Tool gave him a yellow-eyed stare.
"You're not stupid. Think for yourself."
Naylor considered. "The docks. If we work at the docks, we can make money and keep an eye out for her people."
Tool grunted and turned away. Naylor took it as agreement.
Chapter 18. Getting work wasn't hard. Getting work that paid as well as shipbreaking was impossible. Only Tool had easy access to work, acting as muscle on valuable goods as they transshipped to the Mississippi and the rail yards. Without a clan system or union contact or a family, Naylor and Nita were left with the dreg work, running messages, hauling small items, begging. A man in an alley offered to buy their blood, but his hands and needles were filthy, and his eyes said he wanted to harvest more than their veins. They ran from him and were relieved when he did not follow. A week passed, and then two. They settled into poverty-ridden routine as they watched ship after ship arrive and then depart, making way for a new disappointment to come gliding in on white canvas wings. Naylor had expected Nita's prissy distaste for the slums of the Orleans to continue, but she adapted quickly, with a fierce attention to whatever Tool and Naylor taught. She threw herself into work, contributed her share, and didn't complain about what she ate or where they slept. She was still swank, and still did weird swank things, but she also showed a determination to carry her weight that Naylor was forced to respect. One early morning, with Naylor and Nita both elbow-deep in blood as they gutted black eels for a grub shack, he admitted what he'd been thinking.
"You're okay, lucky girl."
Nita filleted another eel and dropped its carcass into the bucket between them.
"Yeah?"
She was only half-listening as she worked.
"Yeah. You work good,"
Naylor said as he yanked a fresh eel from another bucket and handed it across to her.
"If we were still at the shipbreaking yards, I'd vouch you onto light crew."
Nita took the eel and paused, surprised. The eel coiled around her wrist, thrashing. Naylor stumbled on.
"I mean, you're still a swank, but, you know, if you needed work, I'd stand for you."
She smiled then, a smile as bright as the blue ocean. Naylor felt his chest contract. Damn, he was crazy. He was actually starting to like this girl. He turned and fished out another eel for himself and slashed it open.
"Anyway, I'm just saying you do good work."
He didn't look up again. He felt his skin darkening with a blush.
"Thank you, Naylor," Nita said. Her voice was soft.
"Sure, it's nothing. Let's get these eels done and get out to the docks. I don't want to miss the first work calls."
Nita had given Naylor and Tool a bunch of names to memorize, writing them in the mud for Naylor so that he could memorize the pattern of their letters. She described the flag her company flew so that they could look for the ships and between the three of them be sure of spotting any likely candidates. None of her instructions turned out to matter. Naylor was running a message to the Labadee Bar from the first officer of the Gossamer, a sleek trimaran with fixed wind-wing sails and an impressive buckle cannon on its foredeck, when everything went wrong. The message was a sealed envelope, waxed and marked with a thumb strip as well,
and Naylor had a chit for payment on delivery, if the captain was willing to thumb it. As he ran down the boardwalk to the deep swim, he was already thinking about the annoyance of having to make the passage back to the Orleans with one hand above the water. If he soaked the letter, he might not get a tip from the captain. Richard Lopez appeared like a ghost. Naylor froze. His father's pale, bare head bobbed above the crowds of laborers, an apparition of evil with his red dragon tattoos running up his arms and curling about his neck. His pale blue eyes stared at everything that went past, taking in the docks. Naylor's mind screamed at him to run, but at the sudden sight of his father he was filled with terror and couldn't move. Two half-men were with him, their huge bodies pushed through the crowds, towering over everyone else. Their blunt, dog-like faces stared at the people with contempt, their noses twitching for a scent, their dappled dark skin and yellow eyes watching hungrily. After weeks in Toole's company, Naylor had forgotten how frightening a half-man could be. But now, as these great beasts moved through the crowd, his fear returned. "Move, move, 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 move!" Naylor ducked low, hiding himself in the crowd, and lunged for the boardwalk's edge. He dropped over the side, the letter for the captain at Labadee Bar forgotten. He sank into the waves and swam under the floating dock. There was just enough space for him to breathe if he craned his neck back and stuck his nose into the small gap between the water and the bottom of the boards. Overhead, the planks creaked and thumped with foot traffic. Water and grime lapped around Naylor's cheeks and jaw as he peered up through the gaps in the planking. People moved past. Naylor held silent, watching for another glimpse of his father. What was the man doing? How did he know to look for him here? The trio appeared in Naylor's vision. All of them were well-dressed. Even his father had new clothes, not a stain on them, no tears. Not beach clothes at all. Swank. The half-men had pistols in shoulder harnesses and whips coiled at their belts. They stopped above Naylor and surveyed the crowds of coolie laborers hauling freight. Grimy waves sloshed over Naylor, the wake of a passing boat. The waves shoved him up against the planks beneath his father's shoes. His face scraped, and he held his breath, as he sank and then bobbed up against the boards again, trying not to make any sound. Splinters stung his lips, and water ran up his nose. Naylor fought the urge to splutter and cough. If he gave himself away, he was dead. He ducked his head under the water and blew his nose clean, then surfaced, forcing himself to be silent. He took a careful, shuddering breath. The three hunters still stood over him, surveying the cargo activity. Naylor wondered if they had just guessed that he would go to the Orleans, or if they had somehow tortured Pima or Sodna for an answer. He forced the question from his mind. There was nothing he could do about that. He needed to solve his own problem first. The half-men surveyed the dock workers with a calm detachment so much like Toole that they could have been brothers. The half-men watched the people, and Naylor watched them, putting his hands up against the boards as more waves threatened to shove him into the wood. He kept hoping they would say something, but if they did, the rumble of the boards and the splash of the waters around him obscured it. He prayed that Lucky Girl had the sense to be on the lookout. Toole as well. It was just the barest luck that had allowed Naylor to recognize his father and duck away. He trembled at the realization of how close he had come. Richard and the half-men moved on, still surveying the people. They had to be looking for Lucky Girl. Naylor trailed after them, eeling silently beneath the boardwalk. The trio walked quickly, and Naylor almost lost them twice amongst the thump of workers and crew on the floating docks. He was swimming so quickly that he almost revealed himself when his father climbed off the dock and into a skiff.
His father's face flashed into view below dock level.
Naylor sank into the water and kicked silently away, surfacing safely in the shadows.
When he came up, his father was saying,
"See if any of the other crews had any success. Then send word back to the ship."
The half-men nodded but didn't respond. They loosed the skiff's sail and it pulled away from the dock.
Naylor watched them go, wondering if he would ever be rid of his father.
No matter how far he ran, no matter how he tried to hide, always the man was there.
Naylor started swimming beneath the boardwalk, easing his way to the buoys. He didn't know where Tool was, but Lucky Girl was supposed to be cleaning pots for a fish house down on the water's edge. If his father caught sight of her, it would be all over.
Tool. Tool would have to take care of himself. When he got to Nita, she was excited. She took her hand out of the murky brown water that she was washing dishes in and pointed out to a ship in the harbor. A new one that had just arrived.
"That one. Dauntless. It's one of the clippers I've been looking for."
Naylor glanced at the ship, chilled.
"I don't think so. My dad's here. He's got goons with him, half-men. I think he's linked up with your swank Uncle Pice."
He tugged her away from the cook shop. "We need to lie low, disappear for a while."
He searched the crowds for signs of his father. The man was nowhere to be seen, but that didn't mean he wasn't there, or that he didn't have others searching. The man was sly, had a way of popping up.
"No!"
Nita shook his hand off her arm.
"I have to get onto that ship," she pointed. "That's my ticket out. All we have to do is get to it."
"I'm not sure that's the ship you want. My dad was just talking about a ship. It's a big coincidence to have your ship and my dad show up at the same time."
He tugged her arm. "We need to lie low. My dad sounded like he had more people with him. They're going to spot us if we don't duck and cover."
"So you just want to let Dauntless sail away?" she asked, incredulous.
Naylor stared at her.
"How come you aren't listening to me? My dad is here with half-men, swank-dressed, all of them. And he was talking about a ship."
He nodded at the ship.
"Probably that one." "Not Dauntless. The captain is Sung Kim Kai. She's one of the best captains my father has. Absolutely loyal."
"Maybe not anymore. You don't know what's happened since you went running. Maybe someone else is commanding."
"No, it's not possible."
"Don't be stupid," Naylor said. "You know I'm right. My dad and the Dauntless showing up on the same day? It's the only thing that makes sense."
"It wasn't Dauntless that was chasing me before," she said stubbornly. "It was Pole Star. I trust Captain Sung."
Naylor hesitated.
"We'll check," he said finally. "But we're not just going to walk out and get snagged like a couple of crawfish jumping into a pot. It's too big a coincidence to have my dad and your ship show up at the same time. It's probably a trap."
He tugged at her. "Right now we have to get out of sight. None of this matters if they bag us while we're gabbing in broad daylight. I'll go out again tonight, check things out."
"What if the ship leaves before?" she pressed.
"What then?" "Then it leaves,"
Naylor said heatedly. "Better not to get bagged than to rush things on a hope.
Maybe you're eager to get yourself caught, but I'm not. I know what my dad will do if he catches me, and I'm not risking it. There'll be other ships, but you won't get a second chance if we screw this up."
"There's worse things than hope, Naylor."
"Yeah, getting caught by my dad would be at the top of my list. What's yours?"
Nita gave him a dirty look, but he could tell she'd gotten the point. She'd lost the feverish excitement that had first filled her.
"Okay," she said. "Let's get out of here."
She carried her basin of cracked pottery back into the fish shack and came back a minute later.
"They won't pay me for today unless I stick until dinner. It doesn't matter.
Naylor could barely contain his fear and frustration.
We need to get out of sight.
They hurried down the boardwalk and then slipped into brackish waters, waiting until they reached one of the old mansions that filled the area. The bottom floor was entirely flooded, and the place was caving in on itself, but the upper floors held a slew of squats. Toole had convinced the gang who ran the place to let them crash in one of the rooms above. He had chosen it because one of the upper windows afforded a view down to the boardwalks, and also out to the ships. A decent squat, and with Toole as their protector, no one bothered them. Lucky Girl was glad enough to have a place to crash that she had barely complained about the snakes and roaches and pigeon nests that they shared space with. Together they climbed the creaking stairs, stepping over broken and mildewed missing steps and finding their way around the holes and gaps in the floors to their room. A rusty spring bed without a mattress lay at one side, but they didn't keep anything else in the room. Nita went to the window and stared out at the ship. She looked like the little kids who squatted outside of Chen's, hoping for scrap bones, starving. Desperate and starving for something that they weren't quite sure would come to them. Naylor said, "If the ship's still here tonight, we'll go after it then. When not so many eyes can pick us out, maybe we'll do some asking around. See if we can run a message out to your smart captain. See if she's real, then we decide what to do. But we'll test it first, right? You don't jump into a pond until you check for a python at the hole. And you sure as hell don't go out to that ship without a way to get off if things go wrong." Nita nodded reluctantly. They watched as darkness settled on the boardwalks. Laborers streamed back to their squats and street stalls opened for dinner. Music came from the bars, Zydeco and High Tide Blues. Mosquitoes swarmed. Naylor studied the crowds, glad they were in darkness. He had a prickling feeling that his father was still out there, watching for him, that the old man knew just where he was and was circling in for a kill. He fought off the fear.
"Tool's late," Nita said.
"Yeah."
"You think your dad got him?"
Naylor shook his head, frustrated, trying to scan the crowds. "I don't know. I'm going to go look around."
"I'm coming, too."
"No." He shook his head vigorously. "You stay here."
"Like hell. I'm no more recognizable than you."
She pulled her long hair over her face so that she was shielded by ratty lengths. The days in the swamps and water of the Orleans hadn't been kind to the silky strands.
"Probably even less."
Naylor had to admit she had a point. She didn't look much like the swank he and Pima had found in the shipwreck. She was pretty, maybe one of the prettiest girls he'd ever seen, but definitely different than before. Now she blended. "Okay, sure, whatever." They slipped out of the building and down into the water, making their way slowly toward the crowds. They found a place in the swamp, land bordering the main boardwalk, and crouched together, scanning the night traffic, looking for signs of Toole or of Naylor's father and the half-men he had appeared with. Naylor shuddered at the thought of his father with goon muscle like the half-men at his beck and call. Toole was terrifying enough without a man like Richard Lopez in charge. Naylor cursed, feeling pinned down. He didn't like any of the options. Didn't relish testing the loyalty of Nita's Captain Sung out on the Dauntless. Didn't like sitting here, half exposed, trying to figure out why Toole was missing. Nita was watching him. "Do you ever wish you just took the gold off my fingers when you had the chance?" Naylor hesitated, then shook his head. "No," he grinned. "At least, not lately."
"Not even now? With your dad looking for you?"
Naylor shook his head again. "It's not worth thinking about. It's already done." He saw a hurt look cross her face and hurried to explain himself. "That's not what I meant.
I'm not saying you're just some mistake I've got to live with. I mean, it's part of it.
Again, the hurt look.
Damn, he was making a hash of this, and he didn't even know what he was trying to say.
I like you. I wouldn't trade you to my dad any more than I'd trade Pima. We're crew, right?
He showed her the palm of his hand where he'd slashed it for their blood oath.
I got your back.
You've got my back. Nita smiled slightly. And you'd vouch me on the light crew. You're full of compliments, aren't you?
Her dark eyes held him intense, serious.
Thank you, Naylor, for everything. I know if you hadn't saved me, she paused. Pima didn't care. She just saw a swank.
She reached out and touched his cheek.
Thank you.
There was something in her eyes Naylor hadn't seen before. It filled him with a tingling hunger. He realized that at this moment, if he was bold, he leaned forward. Their lips touched. For the briefest moment, she leaned in to him, let her lips press more strongly against his. Then she drew back, flustered, and looked away. Naylor's heart beat wildly. He could hear his blood in his ears, thudding excitement. He tried to think of something to say, something smart, something to make her look at him again, to renew the connection he'd just felt a moment before. But the words didn't come.
Nita pointed.
"Tool's coming," she said thickly. "Maybe he'll know something about the ship."
Naylor turned and caught sight of Tool in the crowd, headed in their direction. He felt a confused rush of relief and frustration at the interruption. And then something else caught his eye. Across the crowds, two half-men hurrying to intercept Tool.
"It's them," Naylor said. "Those were the ones with my dad."
Nita sucked in her breath.
"They see Tool."
"We have to warn him."
Naylor tried to get up, but Nita grabbed him and yanked him down.
"You can't help him," she whispered fiercely.
He tried to shout to Tool, but she pressed her hand over his mouth.
"No," she whispered. "You can't. We'll all be caught then."
Naylor looked into her fierce, solemn eyes and nodded slowly. As soon as she took her hand away, he sprang up and gave her a writhing look.
"You're a cold one, aren't you? Hide if you want. He's our crew."
Before she could stop him again, he was off and running, jumping through the vines and out onto the boardwalk. Tool saw him running and waving.
"Look out!"
Naylor shouted. Tool turned and saw his hunters converging. Snarls echoed in the night, and then the half-men were all moving. Fast, blurringly fast. Faster than any natural human could ever move. Machetes appeared in the dogmen's hands. They dove for Tool, snarling. One of them flew back, thrown by Tool's strength, but the other swung his machete. Blood sprayed the air, an arc of black liquid gleaming in lantern glow. Naylor cast about for a weapon, something he could throw, a club, anything. Nita grabbed him and dragged him back.
"Naylor, you can't help him," she said. "We have to run before they see us."
Naylor looked back desperately, fighting her pull.
"But..."
The crowds roiled where the half-men snarled and battled. Naylor heard wood beams cracking. The crowd obscured what was happening, but suddenly the rotten frontage of a building gave way and collapsed. Dust boiled up into the air. People screamed and stampeded from the wreckage. Nita yanked his arm.
"Come on! This isn't a fight you can survive. They're too fast and too strong. You've never seen half-men fight. You can't help him."
Naylor stared at where Tool had disappeared in dust and wreckage. More snarling rose, and then a scream, high and animal. Hating himself, Naylor turned and ran, ducking and dodging the crowd. They huddled near the water's edge, watching the lights out in the deeps, watching for more of Pice's creatures. People walked by,
ignoring the two urchins on the shore, just another pair of the many that came and went like the junk in the tides.
"I'm sorry," Nita said. "I didn't want to leave him either."
Naylor gave her a withering look. "He was helping us."
"There are some fights you can't win."
She looked away.
"Half-men don't fight like people. More like hurricanes. We would have been killed or caught, or just made it harder for Tool to fight on his own. And now he's dead."
She was silent, lips pressed together, staring out at the blackness and the reflections of torches and LED beacons on the waters. Oars rattled in oarlocks and the distant buzz of a pilot boat wafted across the water to them.
Finally, Nita said, "We have to try to get to the Dauntless. It's the only way."
Naylor didn't want to agree, but he didn't see any better option. Without Tool to give them protection in this city, they were minnows waiting to be eaten. They couldn't even keep their squat if he wasn't around to provide muscle. But the sudden arrival of the ship along with his father and the half-men filled him with unease. They were too closely linked. The ship had come, and his father had appeared like a wraith on the boardwalks, and it was only dumb luck that allowed Naylor to avoid the men. And now the Dauntless sat out there in the waves, beckoning like bait on the line. Throughout the Orleans, Lucky Girl's enemies would be searching harder now, sure that they were on the scent. The finding of Tool would bring more people down, waves of searchers. It would inspire his father for certain. Surviving in the drowned streets of the Orleans would be impossible. They couldn't work in the open, couldn't let their faces be shown without drawing attention. Nita said,
"We're going to that ship out there, and Captain Sung will help us get to my father."
Naylor shrugged. "It's your funeral."
"Yours too."
Naylor stared at the distant docks and the bustling of nighttime Orleans. The dead city, still half alive, like a zombie corpse reanimated, because people needed the trade, and the mouth of the Mississippi still poured down through the center of the continent with its great barges full of food and whatever manufactured objects came from the northern cities. All sorts of places, upriver probably, lots of places to hide. All sorts. And them, just a couple bits of driftwood. They could float.
"We could go upriver," he suggested.
"Not until I know about the Dauntless."
Nita stabbed her finger toward the distant shape of the ship.
"That's where I'm going, with or without you."
Naylor searched the crowds, then sighed. "Fine. But I'll do it by myself." He held up a hand, forestalling protest. "If your captain's there, I'll find her. If I find her, then we bring you out."
"But they don't know you."
"You're the one everyone wants. They're not hunting for me, except to get to you. There's a chance I can at least look things over. But you'll be recognized in a second. These aren't my people. They're yours."
"What about your dad?"
Naylor made a sound of exasperation. "If you're worried he's on the boat, then why go out there at all? Since you won't listen to me and stay away, I'll go take a look. I know how to sneak up on them, and it's a hell of a lot easier if I go alone." He grimaced. "Stay out of sight. I'll meet you at the squat and let you know." Without waiting for a response, he jogged down the planking and waded into the black water. He made his way out toward the floating docks, swimming slow and off the main marked path through the water. At least this way he could approach unnoticed. Cool water lapped around him, the darkness almost total. He kept swimming, making his way toward the beautiful ship. He had dreamed about ships like this, about being on their decks, about sailing on them.
and now he was on the verge of sneaking aboard one.
When he thought about it, the only thing that had ever seemed truly beautiful to him were these ships with their carbon fiber hulls and fast sails and hydrofoils that cut the ocean like knives as they crossed the great oceans or made their way over the pole. He wondered how cold it was in the north. He had seen photos of ships rimmed with ice as they went through the polar night on their way to the far side of the world. The distances were immense, and yet they sailed so fast and so sleek, undeterred. It took 15 minutes of swimming, and his arms ached by the time he reached the Dauntless. He slipped beneath the docks, bobbing in the salt water and listening. Conversation. Men and women joking, talking about shore leave. Another complaining about resupply rates and local con men. He listened as he bobbed in the depths. A pair of half-men waited at the gangway. Keeping guard and another pair were on the ship fore and aft. He shivered. He'd heard they could see in the dark, and Tool had never seemed uncomfortable in dim light. Now, all of a sudden, the fear that they would pick him out of the blackness filled him with an almost paralyzing terror. They would see him. They would hand him to his father, and he would die. His father would cut him open. Naylor drew deeper under the dock, listening to the tramp of feet. A few conversations mentioned a captain, but no name to go with it, only the captain wanting to be underway, the captain having a schedule. Naylor waited, hoping for some mention of the saintly Captain Sung. The waves jostled him. He was starting to get cold from a lack of exercise. Even this warm tropic water was starting to suck the heat from him. The floating dock and its anchor moved and swayed. Footsteps thumped overhead. The whine of a motor launch, someone burning biodiesel to reach the ship. Faces gleaming in the darkness. Men and women with scars and hard looks. Some hurried down to greet the craft.
"Captain?"
The man didn't respond. Just climbed out. He looked back.
"We need to be underway."
"Yes, sir."
Naylor waited, heart thudding. It wasn't Captain Sung. This was a man, not a woman, and there was nothing of the Chinese about him. Lucky Girl had been wrong. Things had changed. Naylor forced down his disappointment. They'd have to find another way. The captain was standing almost directly above Naylor. He spit into the water no more than a foot away.
"Pisces people are all over the docks," he said.
"I didn't see a ship."
The captain spit again.
"Must have anchored off sight and shuttled in."
"What are they doing here?"
"No good, I'm guessing."
Naylor closed his eyes. "The enemy of my enemy is my friend," he thought. The captain and his lieutenant were climbing the gangplank.
"We'll leave with this tide," the captain said. "I want to be underway before we have to speak with them."
"What about the rest of the crew?"
"Send back for them. But hurry. I want to be gone before dawn."
The lieutenant saluted and turned for the launch. Naylor took a deep breath. It was a risk, but he didn't have any other choices. He swam out from under the dock and called up,
"Captain!"
The captain and his lieutenant both startled. They drew their pistols.
"Who's there?"
"Don't shoot,"
Naylor called.
"I'm down here."
"What the devil are you doing down in the water?"
Naylor swam close to the planking and grinned.
"Hiding."
"Get up here."
The captain, still wary.
"Let's see your face."
Naylor scrambled out of the water, praying that he hadn't made a mistake. He squatted, panting on the deck.
"Dock rat,"
the lieutenant said with distaste.
"Swank,"
Naylor made a face at him, then turned his attention to the captain.
"I have a message for you."
The captain didn't approach, and he didn't put down his pistol.
"Tell me then."
Naylor glanced at the lieutenant.
"It's only for you."
The captain frowned.
"If you've got something to say, say it."
He called behind them.
Not Vine! Toss this rat back in the water!
The two half-men rushed forward. Naylor was stunned at how fast they were. They were on him, grabbing his arms before he even had a chance to consider fleeing.
Wait!
Naylor cried. He struggled against the iron grip of the half-men.
I have a message for you! From Nita Shottery!
A sudden intake of breath. The captain and his lieutenant exchanged glances.
What's that?
The lieutenant asked.
What did you say?
He stormed over to where Naylor was held.
What's that you say?
Naylor hesitated. Could he be trusted? Could any of them? There were too many things he didn't know. He had to gamble. Either he'd gotten lucky or he'd walked into a trap.
Nita Shottery. She's here.
The captain came up close, his face hard.
Don't lie to me, boy.
He took Naylor's face in his hand.
Who sent you? Who's behind you with lies like this?
No one.
Bullshit.
He nodded at one of the half-men.
Whip him raw, Not. Get me some answers. I want to know who sent him.
Nita sent me, Naylor screamed. She did, you rotten bastard. I told her we should run, but she said you could be trusted.
The captain stopped.
Miss Nita is dead more than a month. Drowned and dead. The clan mourns.
No,
Naylor shook his head.
She's here, hiding, back in the Orleans. She's trying to get home, but Pice is hunting her. She thought she could trust you.
The lieutenant smirked.
Christ almighty, look what the fates dragged in.
The captain stared at Naylor.
You baiting me?
He asked.
Is that it? You're baiting me the way they did Kim?
I don't know Kim.
The captain grabbed him, pulled him close.
I'll strangle you with your guts before I go down like she did.
He turned away.
Whip him. Find out who sent him. If the girl's out there, we'll go hunting.
The lieutenant nodded and turned. As he did, the captain raised his gun and shot the man in the back. The gunfire echoed in the darkness, running flat across the water. The lieutenant crumpled to the planks. Smoke curled from the barrel of the captain's pistol, slowly dispersing. Naylor stared at the dead man. The captain turned back to the half-men.
Let the boy go.
Naylor found his voice.
Why did you do that?
He was my minder,
the captain said simply. To the half-men he said,
Weigh him down and then go with the boy. We're leaving with the tide. And the rest of the crew?
The captain grimaced.
Find Wu, and Trimble, and Cat, and Midshipman Reynolds.
He stared out at the water.
And do it damn quietly. No one else, you understand?
He turned to look at Naylor.
You'd better not be lying to me, boy. I don't fancy a life of piracy, so you'd better damn well be right.
I'm not lying.
The half-men, Knot and Vine guided him into the launch. They were huge and daunting. The boat moved slowly away from the dock, aiming for the deep streets of the Orleans.
Where are we going? Naylor asked. She's close to the shore. We don't need to go so deep into the drowned city.
First our men, then her,
Knot said. Vine nodded.
She will need protection. It is better not to drag her into the open until we are ready to run.
Run from what?
Vine grinned, showing sharp teeth.
The rest of our loyal crew.
Chapter 19. Knot and Vine were fast and efficient, moving from bar to nail shed to bar, seeking silently and collecting their fellows. They said little to Naylor as they worked the Orleans. The rest of the crew were regular people, not half-men at all. Wu, tall and blonde and missing fingers. Trimble, thickly muscled, with forearms like hams and a tattoo of a mermaid on one bicep. Cat, with his green eyes and steady stare. Reynolds, with a long black braid running down her back, short and stocky and with a pistol in her belt. Reynolds was the first located and she took command. At each venue, all she said was, "Nita!" And the drunken crew sobered or dropped their whores and came away until they were a fast-moving knot of muscle and bare steel cutting through the drowned city's revelry of sailors and traders. It was astonishing to watch how efficiently they moved. An entire team mobilized instantly at the invocation of Lucky Girl's name. Astonishing to see the value these people placed on her. Until recently, Naylor had mostly thought of her just as a rich girl who bought the muscle she needed, but here was something else. This clustered tribe of weaponry and purpose. Total loyalty. More intense even than crew loyalty in the shipbreaking yards. Reynolds pointed them to scouting locations. "Anyone seen Kaliki and Maishin?" Heads shook. She smiled tightly. "Good. Keep your eyes out for anyone you've seen on another of the company ships. We know Pisces' lackeys are around and they're hunting too." She turned to Naylor. "Where is she?" Naylor pointed out the drowned mansion that overlooked the Orleans waters. "Up there, in one of those rooms, where the trees are growing out of the roof." Reynolds nodded at Vine and Knot. "Go get her." She waved at Wu. "Bring the skiff around." Naylor said, "I'd better go too. We saw some other half-men before. Pisces. They were hunting for her. She'll think you're with Pice." Reynolds hesitated. Cat shrugged.
"Captain Candless believes him, right?"
"Go," she said. Naylor ran to catch up with Knot and Vine. "She's up here," he said breathlessly. He slipped ahead of them, leading. They sloshed into the collapsing house, water splashing around them. Rotten stairs creaked as they made their way up to the squat. The house was strangely silent. No one was in it at all. None of the other slum dwellers. None of the other scavengers and dock laborers. It should have been full of the snoring bodies of coolie laborers, all exhausted and unconscious from their day shift work. Instead, there was silence. Their own room was empty, except for the rusted bed and its springs. Naylor came down the stairs to the flooded main floor, shaking his head, followed by the half-men. "I don't get it. She's..." A shadow in the waters moved, sending ripples. Knot and Vine growled. "Lucky girl," Naylor called softly. "Nita!" The shadow resolved into a thickly muscled form, slumped against a rotting wall. Water up around its waist as it sat, breathing heavily in the darkness. One hard yellow eye opened, flaring like a lantern in the darkness.
"Your father has her now," the shadow rumbled.
"Tool!" Naylor rushed forward. Blood smeared the half-man's muzzle and more black blood ran sticky down his chest, slashes from machete cuts. His cheek was laid open with claw marks and one eye was completely closed with a swelling bruise, but it was Tool nonetheless.
"And you didn't fight for her?" Captain Candless stared at Tool, incredulous. "Even when your patron wished her protected?"
They were all on the Dauntless, a huddle of demoralized sailors standing around Naylor and Tool, as Tool explained what had happened.
"The boy is not my patron," Tool rumbled.
He daubed at the blood still oozing from the cut above his half-closed eye. The captain scowled and stalked over to Dauntless's rail. Dawn was just breaking the sky into pale gray, illuminating the floating docks and the distant mist-shrouded structures of drowned Orleans.
"They said they were taking her to a ship. You're sure?"
"I am."
Tool turned his gaze to Naylor.
Your father was disappointed that you weren't with Lucky Girl. He wanted to keep the ship waiting while he hunted for you longer. The man has plans for you, Naylor.
And you just sat and listened while all this went on? Midshipman Reynolds demanded.
Tuol blinked once, slowly.
Richard Lopez had many half-men, well-armed. I do not lunge into battles that cannot be won.
Knot and Vine curled their lips at Tuol's answer and growled guttural contempt. Tuol didn't flinch, just looked at the pair.
The girl is your patron, not mine. If you enjoy dying for the sake of your owners, that is your business.
Naylor felt a thrill of dread at the half-man's words. There was a challenge there, and these other half-men, Knot and Vine, sensed it. Their growling rose. They started forward. The captain waved them off.
Knot, Vine, go below. I'll handle this.
Their growls cut short. Their stares were still hard. But they turned away and went down through one of the Clipper's gangways, disappearing below decks. The captain turned back to Tuol.
Did they say the name of their ship?
Tuol shook his huge head. Midshipman Reynolds pinched her lip, thoughtful.
There's a couple ships that might be down here. We've got Seven Sisters on the north-south passenger run, the Ray running charter, Mother Ganja carrying iron scrap down to Cancun. She shrugged. No one else scheduled down here until harvest season when the grain comes down the Mississippi.
The Ray, then, the captain said. It will be the Ray. Mr. Marne was quick enough to declare confidence in Pice when Nita's father was forced aside. It must be the Ray.
Naylor frowned. The list of ships bothered him.
Are there any other ships on your list? None that would be carrying half-men as crew.
Naylor chewed his lip, trying to remember. There was a ship, another one, or a different name at least, that chased Lucky Girl into the storm. It was a big ship, built for the North. North Run, maybe? Reynolds and the captain looked at him, puzzled. Naylor scowled, frustrated. He couldn't quite remember the name. North Run, North Pole Run.
Northern Run, he tried. North Pole?
Polestar?
The captain prompted, suddenly interested. Naylor nodded, uncertainly.
Maybe.
Reynolds and the captain exchanged glances.
An ugly name, Reynolds muttered.
The captain looked hard at Naylor.
Are you sure? Polestar.
Naylor shook his head.
I just remember that it was a ship for crossing the pole.
The captain grimaced.
Let's hope you're not right.
Does it change anything?
He shook his head. Nothing that concerns you.
He glanced at Reynolds.
Even if it is Polestar, they shouldn't know that we're their enemy yet. None of you did anything to identify yourselves on shore.
Except you, Reynolds observed dryly.
Our late lieutenant is hardly going to complain.
The captain paused, thinking again.
We can take them. With a bit of trickery and their trust, it can be done. A bit of trickery, a touch from the fates.
And a blood offering, someone muttered.
The captain grinned.
Anyone on the Ray or Polestar we can trust.
The others shook their heads.
They've been shuffling crews, Reynolds said. I think Leo and Fritz might have ended up on the Ray.
And you trust them?
Reynolds smiled, showing black teeth from chewing betel nut.
Almost as much as I trust you.
Anyone else?
Li Yan?
Cat shook his head.
No. If she's there, she's gone over.
Naylor watched, not comprehending. The captain glanced at him.
Ah, boy. You're in an ugly fight, you are. A bit of a contested leadership right now in the shipping clan.
Rook,
Trimble said suddenly.
Rook would stay loyal.
Is he on Polestar?
Yes.
That's it, then. When no one else spoke, the captain nodded. Well, then, we're hunting for Pice's traitorous lackeys, and we're going to take their ship, and we're going to free Miss Nita, and take back our company from the usurper. He nodded at the crew. Get us underway. Reynolds, you're promoted now that poor Henry took the plunge. Reynolds grinned.
I was doing his work anyway.
Wouldn't have gotten rid of him if I didn't know it. The crew scattered to their jobs, running to release the lines on the ship and raise the anchors. Tuol heaved himself upright.
Hold the ship, he said. I will not be joining you.
Naylor turned, surprised. You're leaving?
I do not crave death on the seas.
The half-man's sharp teeth showed briefly, a feral smile.
If you're wise, you will join me, Naylor. Walk away from this.
The captain watched, curious.
Who is your patron, then?
He asked.
Not the boy, not Miss Nita. Who, then?
Tuol regarded him steadily.
I have none.
The captain laughed, incredulous.
Impossible. Believe what you wish.
The half-man turned and shambled for the dock. Naylor ran after him.
Wait, why can't you come with us?
Tuol paused. He scanned the crew, then turned his fierce, one-eyed gaze on Naylor.
I told Sodna I would protect you. But I will not protect you from foolishness. If you choose to risk yourself on the sea, it is nothing to do with me. You have a new crew, I think. My debt to Sodna is repaid.
But what about Lucky Girl?
Tuol looked at Naylor.
She is just one person. These people think she is infinitely valuable, but she is just one more who will die. If not now, then later.
He nodded at the bustle of the ship.
Come with me, or stay and risk yourself for these ones. It's your choice. But you should know that they are fanatics. They will die for their Miss Nita. If you go with them, be sure you are willing to do the same.
Naylor hesitated. With Tuol, he could be safe. They could go anywhere. Nita's face intruded on his thoughts. Her smug look when she teased him about not eating with a fork and knife and spoon. Contrasted with that, her frantic urging that he get medicine for his shoulder when he was still nothing but a shipbreaker to her. And then finally, the look in her eyes when they hid beside the boardwalk, her hand on his cheek.
I'm going, he said firmly.
Tuol studied him.
So, you bite like a mastiff and never let go. Just like your father, then.
Naylor started to retort, but Tuol waved him silent.
Don't argue the obvious. Lopez never let anything stand in his way, either.
Tuol's teeth showed briefly.
Be certain that you aren't biting something bigger than you, Naylor. I have seen hunting hounds corner a great Komodo dragon, and they died as a pack because they didn't have the sense to retreat. Your father is more than a dragon. If he catches you, he will slaughter you. And this merchant vessel is no warship, no matter what its captain foolishly believes.
Naylor started to answer, tried to say something full of bravado, but something in Tuol's eyes stopped him.
I understand. I'll be careful.
Tuol nodded sharply and turned away, but then he paused. He crouched down, his great head leaning close. His remaining eye regarded Naylor, and his breath was laced with the stench of combat and blood.
Listen to me, boy. Scientists